Good afternoon, everybody. This is Greg Daniel. I'm fellow and managing director here at the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at Brookings. Thank you all for joining us for the second in our series of webinars on implementation of unique device identifiers, or UDIs. We are pleased to be hosting today's webinar that will take a look at some of the opportunities associated with UDI implementation, specifically for patients and consumers. Today's presenters are Kate Ryan, Senior Program Coordinator for the National Women's Health Network, and Lisa McGifford, Director of Safe Patient Project at Consumers Union. What I would like to let you all know is that we are having some technical difficulties with our conference line. We have about 400 people expecting to dial into this. If you can all make sure that your lines are muted, that would be greatly appreciated. You can do that by just simply pressing mute on your phone. So if everybody could right now take a minute to mute your line, we'd appreciate it. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. I would like to provide some background on UDI implementation and the work that Brookings is doing with FDA in collaboration with Chickasaw Nation Industries to support this effort. Jay Crawley, who is Senior Advisor for Patient Safety at FDA, will then provide an overview of FDA's work to create the UDI system and will provide an overview of important provisions of the proposal that FDA released in July. I'm going to pause real quickly and just remind everybody dialing in, please go ahead and mute your line by pressing mute or press 6-3. That will also mute your line. We are expecting a lot of people dialing in, so please take this moment to mute your line. Thank you. So I'll go ahead and get started. So currently in the United States, there's no real standardized identification system for medical devices. What this means is that there's no reliable way to identify and track medical devices as they move from manufacturer to the health system and then from the health system into patient's use. While stakeholders involved at different stages of the medical device lifecycle may have their own systems for identifying certain devices, communication across stakeholders is very challenging, and the device identification captured may not be sufficiently specific to allow detailed tracking. As some of our speakers will discuss today, this is particularly important concerning when potential safety questions arise regarding a particular device. And we're talking about not only devices that are implanted into patients, but devices that patients use routinely as part of their care. Yeah, it is also in contrast to the situation for drugs. On the drug side, we have the National Drug Code, which is a uniform system for tracking drugs and enables a range of activities, including post-market evidence generation, understanding of effectiveness of drugs and safety concerns, and a lot of these activities are routinely available because of the NDC code, which allows tracking of drugs, not so much on the device side. So in response to the growing calls for development of unique device identification system in the United States, in 2007, Congress passed the Food and Drug Administration's Amendments Act, which included a mandate for FDA to create a UDI system that would enable tracking and identification of medical devices. This system is intended to ensure that UDIs are part of the label or marked directly on the device itself for every device covered by the regulation. Moreover, device information will be available to the public as part of a global UDI database, or GUID ID. Between 2007 and today, FDA has gathered input from stakeholders through a variety of activities, including public meetings, workshops, pilot studies, and calls for comments on key issues relating to UDI. These efforts culminated in July 2012 when the FDA published its proposed rule for UDI. As I mentioned, Jay Crawley from FDA will talk a little more about this rule and its provisions later in the webinar. So advancing to the third slide, what we'd like to do is illustrate what basically we mean by UDI implementation and the overall process that we here at Brookings see as being very important to making sure that UDIs are available and meeting their intended goals. So on this slide, you can see all the way over on the left side is where we are today. Devices are not uniformly labeled with UDIs. Although some manufacturers are voluntarily including UDIs on their devices, the first step in UDI implementation will be to make sure that manufacturers are affixing and incorporating UDIs onto their devices. On the next slide, once FDA issues the final rule on UDI and a standardized UDI system is put in place in which medical devices will be labeled with the unique code, the ability to unambiguously identify medical devices should make possible significant benefits. For example, giving patients access to important information about their medical devices. Just real quickly, if everybody could make sure to mute your lines, please, either press mute on your phone or press 6-3. That would help. Thank you. So having UDIs implemented will enable tracking of device safety and effectiveness, facilitating rapid identification of medical devices in the case of recalls, and all of those things. However, in order for these benefits to accrue, there must be routine capture of UDIs into electronic data sources. It's not enough to have the rule requiring manufacturers to label their devices. We need to have a system in which the electronic health records, health insurance claims, and other electronic health data systems are routinely capturing UDIs and storing that information for subsequent use. It's important to note that FDA's mandate only extends to the UDI development phase, which again is putting UDI on the devices. And during UDI implementation phase, the onus will be on other stakeholders to ensure the uptake of UDI and its success in enabling many of the benefits that I mentioned. There's a lot of feedback on the line. If everybody could just mute their line by pressing mute or 6-3, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. To begin the path of successful implementation, UDIs must first be incorporated into collection fields, as I mentioned. On the next slide, we illustrate that in order to facilitate the uses of UDI, appropriate methods and data infrastructure will also need to be developed. Although many of the UDI implementation challenges will be technical in nature, it's equally important that all stakeholders see value in UDI implementation, and they also commit to doing their part to achieve implementation. With this in mind, Brookings will be working to develop a roadmap, providing stakeholders with a path forward to successfully implement UDIs, tackling both motivational and technical challenges. To identify some of the key barriers that successful UDI implementation may face, Brookings has assembled a work group of expert stakeholders with interests that span the medical device lifecycle to advise on issues related to the implementation of UDI, explore potential strategies for resolving them, and to identify topics in need of further exploration. Over the past year, Brookings has convened two expert workshops on selected issues and possible barriers to UDI implementation identified by the work group. The first expert workshop that we held back in October 15th of last year focused on opportunities and challenges associated with capturing UDIs and health insurance claims. The second expert workshop was held on December and examined possible steps for integrating UDIs into both the administrative and clinical data systems within care delivery sites, largely hospitals and outpatient clinics. In addition, Brookings will convene a third expert workshop next month that will focus on enhancing patient and provider connectivity through UDIs. Brookings has also hosted a webinar to engage with providers and healthcare systems regarding the value of UDI implementation and is hosting the second webinar in this series today. In conducting these activities, Brookings has begun an important conversation around successful UDI implementation with stakeholders from across the medical device lifecycle, weighing in to explore the potential promise of UDI implementation, identifying the key challenges, and developing appropriate strategies for UDI implementation. We believe that the input from a variety of stakeholders, each with their own important perspective, can help inform more complete development of the UDI implementation roadmap. Patients and consumers have a huge stake in this effort's success and therefore should have a strong voice in shaping and driving UDI implementation so that UDIs can realize many of its intended benefits. And we're hoping that today's discussion will highlight some of those areas where patients can benefit from UDIs as well as what patients and consumers can do to drive UDI implementation that will be important for making sure that patients and consumers can benefit from this system. And of course, the success of implementation rests upon full implementation, in which each stakeholder helps put UDI in place and works to drive implementation. None of the stakeholders will benefit from partial implementation. Only with full implementation can all of us begin to reap the intended benefits of fully integrated and fully implemented UDIs. So with that, I'd like to go over just a few housekeeping issues. You've heard me many times. I'm going to say once more, we have approximately 400 folks that have dialed into this, and the line does not appear to be muting automatically. So I ask that you all please, if you just dialed in, please go ahead and mute your line either by pressing mute or dialing 6-3. So before we begin with today's presentation on the proposed rule and then move on to both Kate and Lisa, I would like to quickly go over a few housekeeping items. Throughout the presentation, we encourage you to submit questions throughout the presentations, to submit questions online using the Q&A tab at the top of your screen as you think of them. And once all of the presentations will be done, we'll go in order of the queue to ask you to go ahead and read your question. So in order to do that, you'll have to unmute your line, ask your question, and then we'll go from there. If any of you are experiencing technical difficulties, please call the Level 3 conferencing at 1-888-447-1119. And after the presentations, again, we will open the line for questions. With that, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Jay, who, again, is Senior Advisor for Patient Safety in the Office of Surveillance and Biometrics in Cedar at FDA. Jay, are you on the line?
Yes, Greg.
I'm sorry, CDRH. I did attribute you to Cedar. It is CDRH. Sorry for that.
No worries. It's not the first time that's happened. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate the introduction, Greg, and thank you to all of the team at Brookings for all the work that they're doing and for organizing and hosting this webinar as well. We do look forward to your participation and feedback on this very important issue. As Greg mentioned, I'm going to take a couple of minutes and relatively quickly go through FDA's proposed rule on unique device identification. As Greg mentioned, it did publish in July of last year with a comment period that closed in November, and we are working on a final rule that we hope to have available in June of this year. My contact information is on this slide. Hopefully everyone can see that. We are on the slide set here, and if you have any questions or concerns about what we're doing, please feel free to reach out to me, and hopefully we can help you out. Let me talk briefly about how we got here, FDA's involvement in UDI and where we're going. Much of this work actually started briefly after the publication of the IRM report in late 1999 on Tuero's human, and FDA's work in medical product identification and some of the efforts included the work on the pharmaceutical barcode rule and interest in as Greg talked about, standardized identification of medical devices. As Greg also mentioned, this led to the to a requirement in the 2007 FDA Amendments Act for FDA to develop the UDI system, and we have been working on a proposed rule since that time. We did some database work, pilot work in the intervening years, and we're working on a final database now. As I mentioned, we did publish the proposed rule in July of last year. In July of last year, we also received some additional requirements that I'll talk about more in the FDA Safety and Innovations Act, or FDASIA. The comment period closed in November of last year for the proposed rule, and then we had the FDASIA amendment, which closed in December. And as I mentioned, we are working on a final rule that we expect and hope to publish in June of this year.
And learn more about our commitment to helping the medical community.
Good. There we go. Okay, everyone, please mute your phones and don't put us on mute because sometimes it brings up music. So thank you all very much. This is the implementing legislation. The italicized text was added in FDASIA, the non-italicized text, was the original implementing legislation in FDA. The original implementing legislation instructed FDA to develop a UDI system, which we are doing. FDASIA added three additional requirements. One was that we publish a proposed rule by the end of 2012, which we did. It also encouraged us to finalize the rule 6 months after the close of the comment period, so we talked about June of this year. And it also introduced a new implementation time frame, which is something that we had not talked about, and I will touch on that when I talk about implementation a little bit later on. Greg mentioned this as well, so I just wanted to give you a brief example of what this now looks like, the problems that we have from non-standardized identification. This is one particular device. It's a BD insulin syringe, as you can see. And you can see a number of the different identifiers that BD uses to identify that particular device. And you can also see a whole host of, and this actually, this list went on for about three pages. I just took a piece of it, of the different identification numbers and systems used by various stakeholders throughout the supply chain. So you can understand that if BD happened to, for whatever reason, need to recall this product, so we need to communicate specifically about this product, we would have a very difficult time as everyone was using a different identification system and number to identify this one particular product. And this leads to a host of problems, not the least of which is the difficulty in conducting device recalls. Government Accountability Office conducted a study of device recalls a couple of years ago. You can find it easily on the web. You Google GAO device recall study. But the upshot of this is something we probably all understand, which is that it's very difficult to know where a particular device is at any particular time, and therefore it's difficult to find devices and to recall these devices. This is something I think most of us are familiar with, but this study definitely provides a lot of data to support a concern that we've had for a while. The whole host of benefits to UDI, I'll touch on some more on the next slide, but we do believe that there's a host of benefits to really documenting device use and implantation and patients' electronic health records using UDI. We actually can find particular patients that have a recalled device. Again, everyone, if you could please mute your phones. Thank you. We'll know what devices a patient has prior to revision surgery. We'll know what device to use, what particular programmer needs to be used for what particular device. So a number of advantages when we have device use documented in EHRs that will allow improved post-market surveillance of those devices. A host of other benefits, we believe, can accrue once UDI is in place. Greg touched on the fact that really all stakeholders need to participate in order for us to see these benefits. The top couple are obviously benefits quite important to FDA. We talk about medical device recalls and adverse effect reporting. A lot of interest in secure supply chain and track and trace system these days, not just for pharmaceutical products, but for devices as well. And a host of other benefits that we believe can accrue once UDI is in place. I do want to spend a couple of minutes now talking about how we actually expect the UDI system to work so you'll understand what we're talking about in some more detail. First of all, manufacturers will develop their UDI according to one of a group of accredited issuing agencies. There are a number of organizations, the GS1, PIPIC, and ICCBBA that we've been working with for some years. We do expect each one of these to become accredited issuing agencies. This is in contrast to how, for example, FDA manages the National Drug Code, in which FDA is the one to manage the identification number for pharmaceutical products. We are using this global approach to facilitate the use of UDI globally so that one UDI applied to a device can be used anywhere in the globe. So, again, this UDI is created and maintained by the device manufacturer. Importantly, there are two parts to the UDI. There's what we call the device identifier and the production identifiers. So the device identifier is analogous to a UPC or NDC code currently in use. It identifies a particular manufacturer's product and a particular packaging configuration. And then we have what we call production identifiers, which are the mechanisms that the manufacturer uses to control that device. And we typically see serial numbers, lot numbers, expiration dates, or some combination of those used on devices today. We expect that that will continue to happen. However, that device is currently controlled, so whatever you see on the label of that device, for example, a lot number and expiration date, that would be the device's production identifiers, and therefore that's what would become part of the device's UDI. So the manufacturer, we talked about, creates this UDI. They put it on what we call the base package. So, for example, a catheter package of one or an ICD package of one, to all higher levels of packaging as well, so that if we put we put 10 catheters into a box, obviously the base package catheter has a UDI and the box of 10 has a different UDI so that we can distinguish various levels of packaging through the supply chain. UDI goes on the label of the device, which is where all the other required information goes. So it's where you find the name of the manufacturer and name of the product, for example. And we expect the UDI to be both human-readable and encoded in some form of AIDC technology. In contrast to the pharmaceutical barcode rule that FDA published a number of years ago, in which we require the NDC to be encoded in a linear barcode, we're taking a slightly different approach in which we are not identifying any particular technology that can be used or any particular technology that can't be used. So we're taking a technology-neutral approach. We've been working with manufacturers and the issuing agencies and other stakeholders, and we assume that these groups will continue to work together to make sure that appropriate technologies are used, those that can actually be read by stakeholders throughout the use of that device. In addition to the label requirement that I just described, we also have direct part marking where you actually put the UDI on that unpackaged device for certain categories of devices. You can see there that the three categories of devices that we have identified in the proposed rule for direct part marking are implantable devices, devices that are intended to be reprocessed between patient use, so for example, reusable surgical instruments, and standalone software, all devices that would be subject to direct part marking as well. There are a number of exemptions for various device types that are listed in the proposed rule. I just want to highlight four in particular very quickly. One is that Class 1 devices, which are lowest risk devices, we have three pre-market risk class 1, Class 2, and Class 3, Class 3 being the highest. For Class 1 devices, which are our lowest risk devices, they do not need to include the production identifiers in the UDI itself. Remember, we talked about a device identifier and a production identifier. Class 1 devices do not need to include production identifiers in the UDI. The proposed rule also suggested exempting completely from the rule all over-the-counter devices, both those that are distributed in retail and those that are used throughout healthcare institutions. We have received a lot of comments to this particular provision and will likely change that in the final rule. We also have exempted completely a low-risk, very low-risk group of devices called GMP-exempt Class 1 devices. So this is bedpans and the such, very low-risk devices where people probably would not have a need to identify and track that individual device. We've also included an exemption for devices that are packaged and distributed together, low-risk devices such as bandages. So you have an individual bandage that is packaged and labeled and then put into a box and the box of 10 or 15 is distributed. The UDI would not, in that case, need to go on the individual bandage, but rather on the next higher level of packaging. I have two brief examples of what this would look like on the label of the device, and as Greg mentioned, there are some device manufacturers that have what we would consider to be UDI-compliant labeling already. This is a label from a Medtronic product, and you can see in the middle that there's a long linear barcode and a bunch of numbers underneath of that. This would be the UDI. The first bit of information there, the part that starts with the parenthetical 01, and then there's 14 digits that follows. That's the device identifier, and if you were to look those 14 digits up, you'd find it's one of these products. And you can see that then there's a parenthetical 17, which is the expiration date of this product. You can see how that information matches up with the information a little higher above. And then a parenthetical 21 in the information that follows, which is the serial number of this particular device. You can see that this device has a serial number and expiration date on its label. Those are its production identifiers, and therefore that's the information that is encoded in the UDI. Again, what we would consider to be a reasonable implementation of UDI on the label of the device. A slightly different implementation, you can see in the lower left-hand corner two linear barcodes. The top barcode, again, is a device identifier, the 14 digits. If you were to look that up, you'd find it's one of these devices. And then because this is this label has a lot number and an expiration date, so it's a lot and expiration date control product, that's the information that we see in the lower barcode. So it's parenthetical 17 followed by the expiration date, and the parenthetical 10 followed by the lot number of this particular device. I mentioned before that if you were to look up those that information, you would find something about information about that device, and we are building that lookup table, what we call the Global UDI Database, or GUDID. Manufacturers will be responsible for submitting data that I've outlined here to the database, and we would make most of the information. There's some information which, for various purposes, is not made publicly available, but the vast majority of it is, and we do expect that clinicians and patients and consumers will take advantage of the database to find devices and find information about the devices, and this is the kind of information that would be in the UDI database. Some basic identifying information about the device, the manufacturer, make, model, trade name, for example, particular size of the device if it's offered in multiple sizes, some contact information, some information to help users find and use the device appropriately, for example, whether it's packaged sterile or needs to be sterilized before use, whether the device or its packaging contains natural rubber latex, and then some other information, for example, whether the device is actively marketed or whether it's been discontinued, whether it's single use and whether it's prescription or over-the-counter. We're still working on refining this particular set of data and we'll publish it in the final rule. I do want to make clear some limitations of UDI and the UDI database. UDI is just a foundational element. It does just unambiguously identify a specific device. It doesn't do any more than that. We, as Greg mentioned, we all need to use it. All the stakeholders need to use it fully if we expect to accrue the kinds of benefits that we've talked about. The Global UDI database does not contain production identifiers. It only contains static information, so only device identifiers and the data that I described. The specific serial or lot number, for example, is on the individual device. It's not in the in the UDI database. And we do expect, though, that the UDI database will provide a link, or the UDI will provide a link to other databases or other data sets, for example, recalls and adverse events, and we hope to continue to refine and improve that process moving forward. Finally, I just want to talk very briefly about implementation, which is based on pre-market risk class. Remember, I mentioned that we had three pre-market risk class, class three being the highest. And all of these dates are based on publication of the final rule. We do, as I mentioned, hope to publish the final rule in June of this year. And then Class 3 devices, our highest risk devices, will be subject to the various requirements I just described 1 year after publication of the final rule, so it would be into June of 2014. The second bullet identifies the FDASIA timeline. So we have certain devices that we call life-sustaining, life-supporting, as well as implants would be subject to the UDI requirements 2 years after publication of the final rule. The rest of Class 2 devices, 3 years, and Class 1 devices, 5 years after publication of the final rule. So it's a stepwise implementation based on the use of the device. We are also phasing out the use of our national numbering system, so we will not see these 10 or 11-digit numbers that you see on some devices that particularly move through pharmacies as UDI comes online. And finally, website and email address for our UDI program. Any information that we can make publicly available, we put on the website. And again, feel free to use this email address or the other one at the beginning of the slide set to ask any questions or raise any concerns with us moving forward. And with that, Greg, I'd like to turn it back to you.
Great. Thanks, Jay. That was a great overview. And what I would like to do is remind everybody once again that your lines are not automatically muted when you dial in, so please take this moment to mute your line. We are getting a lot of feedback, and that's because a lot of phones out there are not muted. So please mute by pressing mute or pressing 6-3. Do that right now. That would be greatly appreciated. So now I'd like to turn it on. So, Kate, don't mute your line. We'll need you now. So I'd like to turn it over to Kate Ryan, the Senior Program Coordinator at National Women's Health Network. Kate, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi. Well, first I'd like to start off by thanking Brookings and the FDA for providing a space for those of us working on implementation of the UDI rule to talk, in particular about how it has potential to benefit patients and consumers of healthcare. So I'm going to talk about those benefits and specifically what patients and consumers are hoping to get or want to see from the UDI system. Some of this Greg has spoken about already, and Jay mentioned some of the specifics that I'll get into, but I did want to start just by providing a little information about the National Women's Health Network and how we work on the UDI system. Particularly, it's that we're a membership-based nonprofit, so we work to improve the health of women. And we've been working on the UDI system because we both have a policy side where we work with the FDA to make sure that patient and consumer needs are being met as they move forward with this. But we actually also host a clearinghouse. So we have members who will call in and ask questions if they are having issues with their health care, with a specific diagnosis, or with a device. So we also hear from individuals often on a daily basis. So this has been particularly useful in our work to hear from individuals. So we really feel strongly that the creation of an effective and efficient UDI system is needed and can have some pretty specific benefits for patient and consumer safety. In particular, we think it'll strengthen core components of the FDA's device safety system, some of which, as I said, Jay did talk about. So in particular, both the medical device recall system as well as the post-market device surveillance system. And I'll get into a little bit more specifics as I go through the presentation. But in particular, we really feel it will facilitate faster and more efficient and also more cost-effective device recalls. It'll also enable patients and consumers and health professionals and industry to have more detailed information. So on the patient side, that's pretty important because this is where we feel there's a lack. It will also enable all of those stakeholders to improve the accuracy of adverse event reporting, which in turn will allow the FDA to have improved post-market device surveillance. Of course, assuming this is all picked up. That was Jay's great point. Jay left it on that. We really do need buy-in from all these stakeholders for the system to work as we envision it. One of the things I'm actually going to start with is what I refer to as the CSI problem. This is about kind of knowing your UDI numbers. So many individuals, and this is what we find talking to patients and consumers on a daily basis, if you watch cop shows like CSI or Bones or what have you, they often are able to identify unidentifiable murder victims because they have, you know, a knee replacement or a heart stent. And so a lot of people actually already think that this a device-specific UDI system exists. So we feel pretty strongly that this all needs to be some public awareness and education needed around this issue. Lisa's going to get into more detail on this, so I'll leave it there. But the reason we feel strongly that patients need to be aware of the system is that patients need to be asking their providers when they interact with the device, in particular implanted devices, so that they have that information and it's a reminder to providers and hospital systems that patients do care and they do want to know more information about the devices they have. I am going to focus on implanted devices, largely because they're the ones that patients take home with them, if you will, not the ones they use in a hospital setting where they're trusting their providers and nurses and to manage a lot of that. Not always, and they do want to know about those, but in particular, implanted devices is where we get a lot of questions. So one of the biggest things we see as a benefit to patients is preventing unnecessary harm. And what I mean by this, actually, Jay already noted this in his presentation, are problems with the device recall system. They often can be inefficient and incomplete because there isn't a uniform way to track devices. So having a UDI system where there can be both quick, efficient, and complete recalls, whatever that means, whether it's a lot, whether it's an entire type of device, to ensure that patients aren't unnecessarily harmed. And what I mean by that is that we, the network, had heard from a member, a woman who actually had a device implanted, a surgical mesh for pelvic organ prolapse, implanted in her quite a number of years ago. And unfortunately, it was one that had actually already been recalled when it was implanted in her. It was still on the hospital shelf, and unfortunately, because of a lack, in part because of a lack of UDI system. It was implanted in her before anyone realized that the mesh they had implanted in her had been already recalled for safety problems. She has since had a number of surgeries, I think 9 surgeries, trying to remove the faulty mesh. So this is a very direct benefit of the UDI system, to ensure that actually at an individual level patients aren't being exposed to something that both the manufacturer and the FDA are already trying to keep from patients because they aren't. So this would enable those women not to be exposed to that. Another benefit we see of the UDI system for an individual person is actually knowing when to worry. So I use this example that most people, when they hear about a device recall, as much as I would love it to be from an FDA safety notification, it's not usually. It's usually from a commercial, a scary commercial from one that looks like this. It might be, obviously, usually it can be from a scary lawyer commercials is often how the women who call us talk about them. But if an older person has a hip implant and they see a commercial about a hip recall, they're terrified because they actually don't remember what hip they have. They may have never known specific information, and often what we've found is they actually don't even know, they don't know who made it, they don't know what the brand name is, and it's possible they were told that information, but they don't recall it, and even if they did, if the recall, let's say, had been for a specific spot of a hip that, of the hip they have, a UDI system would enable them to figure out if they should be concerned and going to see their provider very quickly. And so we envision a system where an older woman could, type in her UDI and find out whether or not the hip she has is the one that she should be worried about. So if it's not, great, she can stop being concerned. And if it is, then she can better address the problems with her device. So in this particular case, if patients do have a problem, we at the network often encourage women that we hear from to submit an adverse event report to the FDA using MedWatch. However, most patients and consumers aren't really aware of MedWatch, unfortunately, and for those who are, though, their reports aren't nearly as helpful as we'd like them to be, mostly because they tend to be missing specific information. If there is a consumer MedWatch report, it will often say a hip implant. They might remember the manufacturer, but a lot of these manufacturers make many hips, so that's not terribly useful for trying to narrow down what type of problem is being experienced. Is it just their individual reaction to a device? Is it a situation where there is a lot problem, or is there actually a design flaw problem that would need to be addressed? So we would like to see the both consumer reporting, but obviously also providers and manufacturers could also have improved adverse event reporting with a UDI system in place. So one of the things, MedWatch is just one piece of the FDA's post-market surveillance system. The FDA, working with hospitals and providers, has several other mechanisms that facilitate and conduct post-market safety surveillance of these devices. So obviously providers can usually, in their adverse event reports to the FDA or through MD EpiNet, can provide manufacturer, maybe even materials, a lot number, though not always, and not at the level of detail that would really enable us to hone in on an issue. So what we'd like to, and obviously, and some of this is outside the FDA's area, sphere of influence, no, maybe not sphere of influence, but area of control would be electronic health records, claims data. We'd like to make sure that UDI is incorporated into all of these aspects of healthcare reporting, in part so that it can be, so that device-specific information can be surveilled using the Sentinel Initiative, which would allow for a more detailed surveillance of different devices. So one of the things with the UDI system, though, of course, is that all these mechanisms still lack device-specific information. So we want to make sure that it has the potential to improve this post-market safety surveillance. So specifically, we'd like to make sure that the MedWatch, Consumer MedWatch Forum, and really actually both, I think, manufacturers and providers would appreciate this as well in their reporting mechanisms to the FDA. But we'd also like, as I said, to see it integrated into electronic health records and claims data, which will, on the part of patient and consumer groups wanting to, and also, I hope, with the FDA, but reaching out to CMS and to private insurers to try and get UDI integrated into these systems. This will, as I said, both help the Sentinel Initiative, but also device registries that include UDI will be able to really facilitate active post-market surveillance that will enable the FDA to more quickly identify and evaluate what would look like a potential device safety problem. So in terms of making this work for patients and consumers, one of the things that we'd like to see happen is knowing, you know, patients have very specific information they want to know about a device, and as excellent as the Good ID database looks and having information about whether or not a device is in sterile packaging or whether what their pre-market submission number is, an average consumer is not going to be looking for that information. They're going to want to know whether or not their device has been recalled. If so, the type and extent of that recall, because obviously all recalls are not the same, when that happened. If there are particular new safety notifications for a specific device, for a class of devices, some consumers might want to know about when their device is approved. Though I actually did see in Jay's presentation that it looks like market status is something that will be in the Good ID database, which we think is great, because there obviously are devices, some devices that people have in terms of them that are no longer on the market, either because they're newer versions or what have you, and a lot of patients get nervous if that's the case. So if they both have market status, maybe it's no longer being sold, but they can also simultaneously check recall status to know that it's not being sold because there was a problem, that would really allay patient and consumer potential concern. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up is, as Jay said, Good ID database looks like it will include mostly static information. So what I want to think about for patients and consumers is, where will they leverage their UDI for device information? And if that's not the Good ID database, some of the ideas that different patient and consumer groups have had have been things like a UDI portal on the FDA website. So somewhere, like when you can find a MedWatch report, but somewhere where patients go in, type into a search, an internal FDA search engine, their UDI, and get information like the recall status. If there was, let's say it was for a breast implant and there's a safety warning, for example, now with some with a rare cancer. Things that all this information is on the FDA website often, different safety notifications, the recall databases, even when devices are approved and who the manufacturer is, but they're not all in a place that a lay patient or consumer can find it. I'm sure lots of other advocacy groups could say we spend a lot of time on the FDA website, so we know where to find it, but it isn't necessarily user-friendly. And so what we'd like to see is we'd like to work with the FDA to try and find a way to make sure that this information is available, that it's understandable, it's all in one place, and that the whatever way we present this to patients and consumers is user-friendly. So if there could be something like a portal to get all of this information, or on the Good ID database, if that's how we're going to promote, that's the database we'll be promoting with the new UDI system, if there is a link on that database to the recall database, to the safety notification, consumer safety notification page, basically wanting to make sure this is all interconnected such that patients can get the information they'd be looking for. A couple of different things we'd love to see going forward as the rule is implemented would be things like consumer and patient focus groups. If we can come up with either a home for all of this, the variety of information patients and consumers would want to know, primarily that is connected to safety, you know, if there is a UDI portal that could be, a searchable UDI portal that will give them links to all of these things for their device, to beta test that with patients and consumers to make sure that it actually is understandable to people unfamiliar with FDA. So basically, I just want to wrap up by saying that we think this is a, we're really thrilled that the UDI system is moving so far forward. We've been working on it for a number of years, and it's exciting to see it begin to, to move forward with implementation. We do think it has great potential for patient safety, and not just that. It really is also about providing people with better information about their medical devices, obviously in the context of greater of the greater healthcare delivery system. There is increased interest in patient-centered care and shared decision-making, and we think that enabling patients to get more information and to have a way to do that, like the UDI system, is really fitting with the rest of these reforms to try and make sure that care is really meeting patients' needs, but also engaging them in their own care. But it is, it's so important, so I'll say it again, it is really important that the system be user-friendly and understandable, and that it actually does provide information that is relevant to patients and consumers. I'm actually going to leave it there and turn it back both to, I guess, either Greg or Lisa, but thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Kate. That was very helpful. At this point, we still are getting some feedback. I want to ask if the Level 3 conferencing operator is on the line, and if so, can you go ahead and mute everyone's line? Okay, so we'll move on to Lisa. So Lisa McGiffer is Director, Safe Patient Project at Consumers Union. Lisa, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me all
okay,
right?
Okay, take it away.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon. It's still morning where I am. I'm Lisa McGiffer. I'm with Consumers Union Safe Patient Project. And Consumers Union is the policy and advocacy arm of Consumer Reports. Our project advocates for safer healthcare, and you can go to our website to see the various issues that we cover in our work. In 2012, we began to focus on the safety of medical implants, and that's how I got into this webinar. In our project, we organized people who've had personal experiences with medical harm, and we work with them to create a national network of advocates who can speak up and try to change our policies so that our healthcare system is safer. So sometimes when I think about the future of medical implants, it kind of looks like this cartoon. So many people fail to ask important questions prior to getting a medical implant. And based on some of the stories I've heard, I wonder sometimes if patients could actually end up with something as ludicrous as the implants pictured in this cartoon, because they really often don't know what they have. When I first began working on medical device issues, I was pretty shocked to learn that there was no universal standardized tracking of implants. Working for Consumer Reports, we know that most products do have some kind of way to track. The manufacturers have some kind of way to track, and there's a way to recall products, but that was not necessarily the case when it came to medical devices. So getting UDIs on high-risk devices and implants is a really big deal for consumers, and I think we need to recognize although it's taken a long time to get here, it's really good to finally be on the precipice of having these identifiers in place. But we can't assume that the UDIs are going to solve all our problems by allowing tracking of patients' experiences with implants, removing recall devices from the market, and giving consumers a link to all of the information available at their about their implant. All of that won't happen unless consumers and patients take a proactive role in getting our healthcare system. Uh-oh. I just lost it. Lost my form. So we have to make sure that we have a system that is actually using the FDA. Sorry about that. The reality is that the mandate in the FDA regulation only applies to manufacturers. It only requires them to put the UDI on the implant. The regulations don't require doctors to use them or hospitals to use them. They don't guarantee patients access to the UDI on the device implanted in their bodies. So hospitals might be motivated to use the unique identifiers to track supplies. It might make their work more efficient, and it might be something that they're planning to do. But the question is, will they see documenting who got which device by number as just extra paperwork or something that is value added? You've just heard that we have a major problem getting recalled devices out of circulation. Companies can't locate all the patients who have the recalled implant, and they can't find all of their devices that are in distribution. None of this will change unless consumers take an active role in the process. So in preparation for this webinar, we had some discussions about educating patients about their rights, but obtaining real rights involves typically specific laws that provide the rights as well as enforcement and remedies if those rights are not honored. We don't have that with medical devices, so the rights listed here are mostly what we believe consumers should have the right to. The public is going to have to be educated to understand their role in getting this information and generally demanding it from their caregivers or from the FDA. Too often, rights are assumed, and people find out that they're not in place when something goes wrong and they don't know where to turn. So I decided to create, to suggest a checklist of what a person needs to do when they get an implant. First, you need to know what's being put inside of you. Too many times people fail to ask these basic questions. And I can't believe how many times I've had patients tell me that their doctors said to them, "Don't worry about it, you're going to love this." And that is not enough. Patients need to know information about what type of metal and other substances are being put in their body, possible reactions to the device that are linked to allergies or interactions to other technology. Those are all things that people need to know about. And we want to see this kind of information in the Good ID database, too. We think it's essential information to include the substances that are in the device and not merely a couple of items about reactions to a few kinds of allergies. So hopefully we can continue to work on that and see the database expand to include all this information. So I think some other questions that you should ask before you get a device are things like what's the infection rate? Has this device been tested on women? As we know that sometimes, and we know from recent information that women often react differently to devices and respond differently to them. Also, it's important to find out why your doctor uses a particular device. Many of them use a device because they're comfortable in using it and not necessarily because it's the best one for you as a patient. So if you can't get information about the device, ask for the box that the device came in, and maybe you'll get some information from that. But mostly, don't be afraid to ask for questions. Ask questions. So it might be hard to believe, but sometimes your surgeon doesn't know or doesn't disclose the exact device or even the exact type of device that you're going to get prior to surgery. While there may be special circumstances, we think that that kind of decision should be made prior to surgery, and you as a patient should know what device the surgeon is planning to use and that only if unusual circumstances arise will the surgeon use something else. It's very likely that your surgeon won't know the UDI of the device being put into you, so make it clear to her that when you want that you want the number once it is implanted, and get it in writing and make sure it gets put in your medical record, whether that record is electronic or not. And then after surgery, always get a copy of the record as soon as possible. Otherwise, you might forget, and if some problem arises later, you might have more trouble accessing the record. You shouldn't have trouble accessing your record, but doctors retire, hospitals close, and sometimes things happen, so it makes it's difficult getting information from a device about it, about your from your records years later. Once you find out the device your surgeon intends to implant, we suggest that you look it up. And this is a good exercise in familiarizing yourself with the kind of information available to the public. The FDA, MOD, and recall databases might reveal information that you want to take back to your doctor and discuss prior to surgery. As I mentioned, we're advocating that the GoodID database contain useful and essential basic information about the device, so patients can know what exactly is in their body. For example, is there some kind of metal in the device that might lead to toxicity? Are there other things that you might be allergic to that your doctor is not aware of? So once you get the UDI, you should look it up in the GoodID database and go to your doctor if there's information that you have questions about that you can see in that database. And we think that you should let the FDA know if your UDI is not in the GoodID database. And you should talk to your doctor about that, too. It is possible that you were implanted with a counterfeit or unregistered device. If so, you would want to know about this. So it's a good idea to look it up after you get the UDI. Stephen Baker of Minnesota ended up with a device that his surgeon designed, and his surgeon told him it was just like a brand name device, but better. When he had problems with it and needed a revision, he didn't get what his doctor told him that he had gotten during the revision procedure. So I'm not sure how these personal inventions are going to be identified in the GoodID database, but it will be up to us as patients to keep the databases accurate and to make sure that the UDIs are used to our benefit. The bottom line is, it might seem ridiculous, but if you get conflicting information, make sure the specific device your doctor says was implanted actually was implanted. So there are some things that consumers should push FDA to do. And as Kate mentioned, consumers must advocate and follow through to be sure that the GoodID is linked to other information that is in other FDA databases that are critical with to consumers about their devices. And this is something that's really going to be important for your doctors also, to be able to have an easy lookup and connect the dots of your device to any kind of problems that have already been identified. Right now, FDA does not plan to include the materials that are make up the device in the GoodID database, and we believe that you deserve to know what those materials are. And maybe even it might come to refusing to get a device until you are sure you understand exactly what materials go into that device. The FDA is going to have to provide a clear method for people to provide input on their experiences with UDIs in order to keep it working and being implemented accurately. Public does have a key role in that. There's no way that the FDA can track what happens to every person with every device. So it's up to us to communicate issues back to the FDA, and that means the FDA has to set up processes for us to fully participate. Many consumer organizations and individuals will have an interest in tracking the progress and problems that arise as FDA implements the regulations on UDIs, and we're suggesting that the agency set up a listserv that consumer organizations and individual consumers can sign up for. We should also encourage FDA to engage professional physician organizations to get their members to make use of UDIs and to encourage discussion with their patients. As consumer organizations, we can create the expectation that doctors and hospitals use and give patients UDIs. And there are a number of other roles that we can play to counter any industry efforts to slow down the process or to make information more difficult for consumers to get. We can educate the public on how to be actively engaged in their healthcare decisions, create the expectation that information will be shared, and if it is not, embolden patients to ask for that information. The public cannot be passive in this process, since the UDI regulations do not require hospitals or doctors to do anything with UDIs. As advocates, we can reach out to our followers to get the word out. We can include information on our websites, and like we do at the Safe Patient Project, we can collect stories from people who have personal experiences. We can talk to the media about UDI stories and how this new tool can make a difference in the safety of medical implants. We can use social media to remind others of the key role that consumers must play to make UDIs work for us. And we can collaborate with professional and hospital groups to get UDIs into medical records and into the process of shared decision-making between patients and providers. We should insist that FDA include consumer and patient reps in discussions regarding UDI implementation. Consumers and patients must take an active role in making these UDIs work for us. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lisa, very much for your presentation. At this point, we are going to move into the Q&A session of the webinar. And what we'd like to do is first go to questions that are focused on what patients and consumers can do with regard to UDI implementation. We do have a number of questions that are specific to the UDI rule that we're going to reserve those for the end if we have time so that we can allot more time for the implementation-focused questions. So I would like to ask both of you, Kate and Lisa, first, before we get to those questions. You both talked about very important benefits that UDIs can bring to patients, and Lisa, you ended very nicely with your recommendations on what patients and consumers and specifically organizations can do to drive implementation. I guess what I'd like to hear from both of you are your thoughts on one of the things that we've heard a lot is that it's challenging to communicate the needs of UDIs to patients and consumers, and I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on what the best way to communicate that might be in order to raise the efforts on the patients and consumers to help drive some of this implementation. So, Kate, do you want to give your thoughts on that?
Sure, sure. I think it is true, trying to explain the whole UDI system is difficult, but actually I don't really think it's necessary, to be honest, to explain the entire UDI system. And what I've found, at least working with, just in talking with some of our members, is that instead of getting into the whole, now there's UDI system, and manufacturers have to do this, is what we found, at least in individual conversations, I think it would just need to be tested in terms of larger campaign and education materials, but basically explaining the FDA is now mandating that companies, and it can be as vague as companies, need to have a unique ID on, rather than calling it the UDI, calling it a unique ID, we've found makes is more understandable for people. Devices will now have a unique ID, which is a number that you should ask your doctor for, and if it's implanted on you, it should also, in most cases, will be on your device. But you should leave any situation if you're leaving a surgery with an implanted justifies, you should have a card with a unique ID on it, that if there's a problem or you hear, if you have a problem or you hear about a problem with a device similar to yours, you should be able to type that number into the FDA website, and it's left that vague right now just because we don't have a better way to talk about it because we don't know what it'll look like yet. And it'll let you, you know, it'll help you find out whether or not your device has been recalled, if that's your worry, or it'll let you, you know, it'll be a piece of information you'll include if you want to report a problem. So we've been trying to keep it a little more broad strokes. Hopefully we'll be able to fill in details about the how. I don't know that they, you know, we found it not necessary to get into all the background. But I don't know if, Lisa, you've had different experiences. So.
Yeah, I think, I think the first hurdle is probably to overcome the fact that people actually think these are, this kind of thing is already in place, they are unaware that there isn't such a system, and incredulous when they find out there is not. So I think that I agree with Kate in that you don't have to know everything, but what you have to do is be more transparent about the kind of information that people are looking for. Sometimes we do find that doing focus groups helps to, or even surveys on different messages helps to identify what how people think about things, and a unique ID is probably much better than a UDI. We often speak about medical harm, and we've found that through surveys and focus groups that consumers relate much better to phrases like medical errors or medical mistakes. So sometimes testing those messages can help. I think the best way to educate the public is to create a user-friendly system that actually works for them, that's not too complicated to use, and actually gives them the kind of information they need. What patients and consumers often confront with these kinds of databases is a bunch of numbers and meaningless information with no links to meaningful information for them in a way that they can understand, or an easily accessed way for them to even get to the technical information.
And actually, this is Kate again. I just want to jump in and add to Lisa's point. I agree. I think the biggest piece, a lot of this information that I said we'd like to have centralized, like whether or not it's been recalled, it's in the recall database, and if there's been a safety problem, there's probably an FDA safety notification. But right now, all of those things are in different places, and so if there would be a way for an individual to search based on their UDI and get all of that information in one place, would make a big difference.
And I think that we're asking for something, like Kate said, a portal rather than you don't have to, you know, completely replicate each database in each database, but to have a way to connect and link these databases together. And I think that would benefit patients and providers alike.
Great, thanks. Those are very helpful responses to that question. I will go ahead and turn to questions from the audience. And we do have a question from Mary B. And I think this is for Kate. It's related to the accuracy of UDI reporting on the for the adverse event reporting. Mary, are you on the line, and can you ask your question?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. My concern is, especially for smaller devices like, say, pen injectors, is there anything, or do you have any suggestions on how we can ensure consumers are providing accurate information when they're providing our AE information to us? A lot of them may have poor eyesight to begin with, and we've got a small device with a long number on it now. What can we do to help improve the accuracy for consumers?
Sure. Oh, do you mind if I ask, who is we?
The manufacturers.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. That's actually a really good point, and you're right, because obviously having this on the direct marking is useful for a lot of reasons, including tracking. But when it's a small device, you're right, putting those tiny numbers on there, especially when a large majority of devices are used by the elderly, that can be difficult. One of the things we've all talked about, and there are most certainly, I will just say up front, barriers to this, so this won't be new information, new answer at all, is when a patient is leaving an interaction where they get a device that they're taking with them, whether that's an implanted device or whether it's something like a pen, that there be a card with the UDI on it, or they get to take the box, or it, you know, rather than manufacture a bunch of cards, if it's a, you know, the pen came, the problem is if obviously the pen's coming in a box full of pens, there isn't one box, but basically they have to be able to leave with something, paper, with the plain text UDI on it, whether it's the number, the alphanumeric UDI, primarily with the idea, especially with the elderly, and what we end up saying in other situations is just like with caregivers, where you're, you know, they most, it's usually oldest daughters, you know, have a list of all their parents' medications. The idea is we want to get into the public consciousness, whether it's for an individual or for a caregiver. The UDI is something you want on your list, the list you keep for yourself or for your the person you're caring for. You know, the list of medications and all the doctor's phone numbers and a UDI. This is the thing you want on your list. So they do need to be able to leave with one where they can read it. So whether or not that's a piece of paper or ideally a copy of their medical record that they could take with them that has entered already into it because it should be in there anyway, hopefully, the UDI, because that would obviously save the time of manufacturing difficulties of maybe having a card. But there should be, we need to talk about a way, and this will probably include hospitals and providers in the conversation, about the best way for them to leave with it printed on paper somewhere so they get into that file of important medical information that most individuals do need. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's...
So that would include pharmacies that dispense these types of devices to, for them to actually... maybe have it as a printout with, on a receipt or something like that?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, whether it's, you know, like if you think in the context of drugs, you're leaving with, for a lot of places, you know, consumer, the patient prescription information, you know, something stapled on the bag. Now, a lot of people throw that away, which is a problem. But obviously, if they're getting something, if the pharmacist is dispensing something that comes in a box, leave it in the box. If the UDI is printed on the box, so that will is a change of habit, but not necessarily a whole lot of extra work. It's just a, if it comes in something with the UDI printed on it on paper, leave it with it, and it's the device you're giving to the consumer.
But is there going to be anything in the final ruling that specifies that type of activity, or, I mean...
I really hope
you know,
so, but I would actually have to turn that to Jay. We would like to be built into the final rule. If not, and obviously to some extent the FDA can only require so much in terms of their authority, but we would love to see sort of guidance that could for both providers and pharmacists and hospitals about how they can implement this, in part because it will provide guidance, but also provide some sort of standardization of how consumers are getting the information, the UDI.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thanks very much for that. We do have a question related to UDI implementation, and I think it's for Lisa, and it comes from Rosalind Parkinson. Rosalind, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. You hear
Great.
Me?
Great. Go ahead.
Yep. Oh, I had written it down, and now I can't see it anymore. But my question, Lisa, is really if the Consumers Union has any recommendations for how consumers should relate to the insurance companies. We've got a big new initiative coming up with the healthcare reform. We're going to all apparently be shopping actively with insurance companies. Should they be asking insurance companies to require the use of the UDI by their physicians and hospitals so that the physicians and hospitals have to put that information in a record before the hospital or the physician is reimbursed? I mean, is that a strategy that we should be exploring?
I think it is a great idea. I do think that would be a good strategy. And we're going to have to think of all different ways that these devices touch the healthcare system and advocate for each of those touch points to have the unique identifier. And definitely, I believe insurance companies should have access to
the UDI might become important for them later if they have to deal with recalls or revisions. So I think that's an excellent suggestion.
I will add to that just to say one other area where I think there are places to kind of hold accountability to make sure people are incorporating it is, for example, meaningful use of health information technology. The National Women's Health Network with a couple of other organizations had sent a letter to the administration about trying to make sure UDI is incorporated, so making sure that a requirement of meaningful use of HIT is incorporating UDI into your system. So that's another example of ways to kind of increase accountability that this is getting done.
But I do think it's really important, and we also signed that letter, and we think it's extremely important for it to be considered, be part of the implementation of health information technology. But we can't wait for that to happen. We do need to stress that it should be in the paper records, too, until there is some kind of electronic record, hopefully soon.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure, thanks for your suggestion. Great idea.
Okay, great. Again, what I wanted to make sure that we focused on is getting questions that are related to consumer and patient's role in UDI implementation. There are a number of questions that are related to the UDI rule itself. If we have time later, I might ask Jay to comment on any of those. But until then, what I do have one more follow-up question for Lisa. Lisa, you did talk about what role consumer organizations can play in creating expectations and driving demand for UDI implementation as it relates for patient-consumer benefit. Can you talk a little bit more about how maybe organizations like Consumers Union or other organizations can, perhaps use their website to possibly link to information that's in the good idea? I guess, if there is recall information that's available, are there direct links that could be made, or do you see a role in organizations to provide that service?
Sure. If you have a website that's following device issues, you can have a highlighted entry that pops up when recall notices are going out. You can definitely link to the FDA databases, the Good ID and the MOD and the recall database. Sometimes when we link to government reports, we include what I call a cheat sheet on how to interpret what you're looking at or how to get to the data that's the most meaningful. So I think there are ways that consumer organizations can give instructions for people on how to navigate through some of these complex databases. We find that people rarely just wander into our website. They're usually driven to the website. So you should think of ways to drive your constituencies to the website. If you have a list that you send emails out to occasionally, when there's a recall list coming out or something, you could send an email out and direct them to go to your website and look that up. You can also use Twitter, blogs, any number of social media outlets to drive people to information that is on your website. Maybe it just tips on what questions to ask your doctor when you're getting a device, or it may be something more specific linking to information about recalls that are on the databases.
Okay, Kate, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's a really good point. I think Lisa, I echo Lisa in that because we are membership-based, obviously people coming to our website, we often describe them as health information seekers. So if they're coming to us, one of the things we have talked about is including, we do have health information resources on our website. And as part of our clearinghouse, the Women's Health Voice, people can call and ask for information. And so one of the things we hope to be able to incorporate as we get more details and with the final rules is information about UDI and what you can do with it. At the moment, I will say it's less, we're doing, you know, the beginnings of consumer education, but obviously that a little bit has to wait until we know what exactly it will look like for patients and consumers, as well as some of the technical aspects are better understood, sort of how, you know, whether or not there'll be a portal for patients and consumers. We don't quite know yet what that will look like until we see a final rule. So once we have that, we'll start to build on it, but likely, you know, groups like ours and like CU will have information on their websites and that we can kind of help direct, but people kind of come to us, so we'll kind of keep reaching out to people in the way that we currently do, but more details will obviously hopefully facilitate some brainstorming about new ways to reach out to people.
You know, one thing I might suggest is that we at Consumer Reports have had a are engaged in a campaign that is collaborating with physician groups. It's called Choosing Wisely. And I think it's a good model for collaborations between consumer groups and provider groups in getting information in the hands of patients as well as doctors in about information that they might not know. And, you know, we make assumptions that doctors know about these issues, but my guess is many doctors don't even realize there's not a unique identifier. And so they have to be educated, too. And so this campaign sort of has components of information to consumers and information to doctors, and I think it could be sort of a model to look at in outreach in between outreach that involves collaboration between those two groups.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from Jeff Secunda. Jeff's question is related to how patients and consumers can get device recall information using UDI. So this might be for Jay, but Jeff, do you want to go ahead and read your question?
Sure, thank you. So I understand that the manufacturers are going to be required to submit the UDIs that are being recalled to FDA. The question is, will those UDIs be placed into the recalls database, and will that recalls database be searchable so people can find the affected UDIs?
I think that's definitely a Jay question.
Yeah.
Jeff, thank you for your question. Yes, we do intend, as you mentioned, that UDIs, that recalls be conducted at the UDI level and that information be submitted and to FDA and put into the recall database. And yes, it is our intention that that would be eventually searchable and potentially other tools built to facilitate its use. As both Kate and Lisa have mentioned, and as we've talked about in the past, that obviously UDI would be the cornerstone of the more effective recall system, and so we need to put processes in place and systems in place that allow people to do that. So, yes, they will be in the recall database and searchable, hopefully, that way, and potentially other tools that would help us use that information more effectively in the future as well.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Great. Thanks. Thank you very much, Jay. So at this point, I just want to turn real quickly back to either Jay, Kate, or Lisa before I wrap up. Are there any other comments that any of you wanted to make?
No, thanks.
Okay.
You know, just if you're interested in getting more involved, do reach out to Lisa and myself. You know, if you're a consumer group or a patient group who wants to get involved, please do reach out to us.
Great, thank you. And I would like to thank all three of you for your presentations, and I'd like to also thank everyone who tuned in for today's webinar. I know we had some technical challenges, so thank you very much for bearing with us. Presentation materials, including the audio, will be posted to the Brookings website in the next few days. Thanks again for participating this afternoon, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.